An eye for an eye, recompense. Red sets up Mr. Kaplan, and we're in steerage, but we're not in steerage. It's the Blacklist. That's the end of it.
The destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome, everybody, to the AfterBuzz after show for Blacklist. This is for the debt collector. This is episode 20 of season 4. We got some 2002 up in here.
Oh my god, I love the song. It feels like 2002.
Listen, and in 2002, definitely sitting on the beach, trying to hook it up in the car.
In my velour jumpsuit.
Hello. That shit was definitely happening.
That's what we all did.
And I don't know about you, but I was well trained in horror movies, and I know the rules. And as soon as I saw those teenagers hooking up by the beach, I was like, one of you is
going
to die.
Going now.
You both probably going to die. Oh. Somebody's getting strapped in a barrel and thrown in the ocean. That's all
God,
I got to say.
That is one of the worst things I've seen.
That's
one
grim.
Of the most terrifying things. I know everyone says, like, being trapped in a coffin. This seems worse to me than being trapped in a coffin.
Well, I mean, either way, you're trapped. You're going to die.
Well, but...
Grim, man. But, you know, I kind of like the debt collector. I mean, I kind of like the character. Welcome, everybody. I'm Joe Sanfilippo. I'm joined by the lovely Julia Kearley.
Hi, everybody.
It's so nice to be here with you guys. Joe Braswell is not here with us because...
He's very important.
As we've established in the past, you can say he's an important guy. I'm just going to say he's a terrible human being, and we hate him. And what he keeps doing, because he's a terrible human being, he's like, just want to make sure we're all going to be at the show on Monday. Yeah, we're all going to be there, because I'm not. Screw you, Braswell. So, moving on. Look at you. You can't even smirk because that's what he does.
It's true.
Just want to make sure we're all going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. All right, I'm not going to be there.
Also, sorry for the massive delay today.
Yes.
Thank you, Los Angeles traffic.
Yes. There was something nasty on the freeways, which is really weird in LA. That never happens.
Never happens.
Ever. Ugh. So we are on episode 20 of season 4. This is Eye for an Eye. This is the Debt Collector.
This is a pound of flesh.
Yes. Recompense.
Shylock.
I liked him. I liked him a lot. What'd you think of this episode?
Oh, I actually really I've said it before. I've said it again. I love the back half of the season. Like, I'm totally 100% into it. I like the twists and the turns every single episode. There's something twisty and turny. I liked the Blacklister. I like how the Blacklisters are weaving into the overall narrative instead of the overall storyline being about a Blacklister. You know, it's sort of fitting more seamlessly than it did before. I dug this episode.
I agree with you. Serialized aspect of the show, I like what they're doing with it a lot more, because I think for the first two seasons it felt very much, at least in the middle episode, certainly, it felt very much like, all right, well, it was like, what you call it? I call it the weekly rape show. What's the show?
Law and Order SVU?
Law and Order SVU.
I've seen them all.
Bum, bum.
Dick Wolf.
Oh, God. Dick Wolf weekly rape show. It's a terrible thing.
There it is.
That's a producer on his game.
I could watch a marathon every weekend in Law and Order SVU.
Worst.
I can't stop. I missed Detective Stabler. That's what I'm saying.
You know what's going to happen? Somebody's going to get violated, and Ice Cube's going to be. I'm sorry, Ice T is going to be surprised that it happened again. He's always shocked. At any rate, so this show I think really went down that road for a little bit, and now they've kind of pulled back and made sure. I think in the writing has gotten a lot better. They're weaving it into the overarching storyline a lot better.
I just love how everything's coming together and everything fits. All these puzzle pieces are slowly starting to fit. Although we still don't know why everyone loves Liz.
Ah, you know, Jodie Walker had it. She said, "How?" And let me see if I can. I'm going to quote Jodie Walker here, but and I say exactly what she has to say here. It is simultaneously admirable, frustrating, hilarious to observe the Blacklist and its characters' parallel obsession with Elizabeth Keene. How many people have died to protect this one life? How many times must we be reminded that it's all for Liz? How many times in the past four episodes since the mid-season return must we revisit the recent explanation that Red created an entire criminal network in order to be able to hypothetically protect Lizzie one day? And so her point of view, and I think is very, very valid, that they've decided that this is no longer a show's, this is not a flaw with the show's logic, this is a flaw with the characters, which I think is a good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
I think that's a sharp way to, because otherwise you're going like, okay, well, the show makes no goddamn sense. But this way, we say, okay, no, the character is a little bit, you know, they're a little bit crazy.
And characters ought to be flawed.
Right? So we've got some more, so we layer on a little more flaw, and it gives the show a little more validity, which I think makes a lot of sense.
They wrote themselves into freedom that way a little bit.
Yes, they did. They're like, all right, Red is not perfect, and Mr. Kaplan might be a little off too, and they're irrationally obsessed with this kid, And now our show makes more sense, and we'll just have about...
But we all accept it.
Yes.
We all completely accept it. I was like, yes, yes, they must do this to save Liz. They must. They must.
And we'll have 46.5% less scenes with Lizzie. I think that's the secret sauce.
There was a moment Eric, my husband, was watching me, or was in the other room while I was watching the show, and that whole exchange between between Red and Dembe, where Dembe had a lot to say this episode.
I know, he had a whole monologue.
I know, but in his monologue, when he said, remember why you surrendered yourself to the FBI in the first place, and he heard me scream, so tell me! I was so mad. So tell me!
Just do it now!
Someone just tell me!
But maybe next week, 2 hours next week.
Oh.
A very special 2-hour finale of The Blacklist. Very serious business. I do want to talk very briefly, before we get into the play-by-play of this episode, I want to ask, and this is a pet peevey thing, so it's out of line for me to even go. But
you have a pet peeve?
I do! You're not going to believe it.
Oh, really?
This is going to shock you!
You're acting so opinionated today!
I know!
Wow!
Did you see, am I crazy? Lizzie looks over at Red, and I don't remember, I think it's after the reveal in the cabin where it's clearly Red, and she's, you know, stapled to the chair, and she looks over at Red and she goes, you had me kidnapped. And am I the only one that felt that the way she said it was almost like she was tied up in 50 Shades of Grey or whatever, and like, it was the weirdest delivery. Just me?
I mean, what do you think she was insinuating with
delivery? I don't know, just the weirdest choice. It was glaring. I had to go back and watch it.
Like it was a sexy you had me kidnapped?
I'm telling you, it felt weird.
Huh.
Maybe it's just me. Internet, if I'm crazy, tell me I'm crazy. Well. That won't prove anything, but certainly... Anyway, when you go, if you go back and watch it again, you can send me a note. Be like,
okay,
you know what?
Okay.
You're off the mark, Flip. Or you can be like, that was weird.
There was a moment where I was like, ooh, Lizzie.
What's going on?
Ew, that makes me a little creeped out.
I know, right? Now it's creepy. Now it's unpleasant. Mm-hmm. We ruined Christmas. There is no Santa. All right. So let's start at the top here. So we've got our teens partying in 2002. Mm-hmm. And we have we have the dude taking off the bra, but he can't really get it. Which, I don't know. That's relatable. I'm like, I get you, man. But it's a snap flick thing. I mean, you gotta have confidence. So she says it's a clasp, and poof, off comes the bra, and I gotta go tell my friends.
Yeah, that's responsible. I'm ditching them.
We're going to the club. Was it? They're going to the club.
First his house, and then some club. Yeah, I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're gonna get down.
They're gonna get down. But she goes to tell her buddies at the bonfire at the beach. God, how 2002 was that?
It really made me nostalgic.
Bonfire at the beach.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That sounds fun.
And if you young people aren't doing bonfires at the beach, what the fuck?
Get
go do a bonfire
together,
at the beach. All you do is you go behind Vons and Ralphs, you break up the pallets, you put them in the trunk, you go to the beach, you blow them on fire. That's how it works. That's a bonfire on the beach. Done. Saved you a lot of time and energy. So we're at the bonfire at the beach. She comes running back mm-hmm. after he gets kidnapped. Randomly, Mace dude.
Maced, yeah.
And
Maced
off
and kidnapped.
We go because he sold some drugs to a senator's
daughter?
Yeah.
And she OD'd.
And she OD'd and then drowned horribly.
Yeah. So the tide came in over her. Well, she passed out. I don't know if she OD'd, but she passed out where she couldn't really move. She wasn't waking up. And then the waves.
Something was mixed in the coke, right?
Yeah,
wasn't
probably.
That the deal? And it knocked
Instead
her out.
It's a cocktail of drugs. So she could have just been mixing her drugs. I don't know.
And that right there is why you don't deal drugs to senators' kids. I think
that's the lesson that you took from this.
That's what I took away from the episode.
If you're going to sell drugs, just don't do it to anyone in power. Their children, you know, they'll come after you.
What's your dad do? Nah, that's cool.
Yeah, okay. You can have these drugs.
So the debt collector, who we find out later is a janitor, but he's got a very, very serious code that he lives by, and it's eye for an eye. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to
recompense.
I like that word, too. What a great word.
I like that word, too, which is why I was kind of excited to say it on this show today.
Say it again.
Recompense. I loved his affectations. I loved his accent. I loved the glee he had and, like, the pride he took in his job.
And I love that he was, like, a blue-collar guy.
Yeah.
And he wasn't apologizing for that.
No.
Like, look, yeah, you pay me to do a thing, I did it. What the fuck?
And he's obviously making a shit ton of cash doing this, but he's not living like he's making a shit ton of cash. He's still in his little house in the middle of nowhere.
He's got his bizarre little display of literal stacks of cash.
Stacks of cash. It's not about the money. He wants to inflict pain.
But he's very disciplined, clearly.
Yes.
Because he's only going to inflict the amount that is adequate, that is appropriate.
Yes.
To establish.
That he's been hired to do, but he takes glee from it.
Yes. I enjoyed him very much. I thought he was a great character. And
I loved his glasses. They were very like Jeffrey Dahmer glasses.
Yeah.
It was very like, you know what? I feel like all serial killers wear those glasses.
Or if they don't, they ought to.
Yeah. It's part of the uniform.
And I like that he's wearing the members only type jacket. You know, yeah. There's nothing cool about him. He's just getting shit done. I enjoyed him very much. So we figured out that he exists. We know that he's a thing.
Yep.
Now, and I thought, and I'm very glad that the episode kind of came around the way it did, because there were a couple things. Now, we cut into Red basically giving the Blacklist, the FBI, here's what you guys are going to go do. Here's this guy, and I've got this intelligence network, and it's very, very, it's big, and it's very important. I'm very special. The network's very special. He gives like a Trump monologue about the network. It's the best network. It's a fantastic network.
But
it's
it was built. But it was built for two reasons.
Two reasons
to keep him free and to keep Lizzie safe.
This is not working out in either
reason.
So we've got the intelligence network we talk about, and then to let you guys know, here's the guy, and this is what's happening, and go check out this barrel.
I was going to let it go. I was going to let it go. It's like, he says, I have eyes and ears everywhere. The debt collector's coming after you. The fact that that just sort of was, like, plucked out of the blue with the easiest, most, like, generalized excuse ever.
Yes.
I have eyes and ears everywhere. Just trust me when I tell you the debt collector's coming for you. And I was like, that was kind of dumb, Blacklist. Okay. But I was going to let it go. So I was so happy with the reveal at the end. I was like, oh, okay.
There was that. And then him in steerage looking through the portal. And at no point did the boat rock. No point was there any sense of motion. At no point. So I'm like, huh, that is just lazy, guys.
And I was thinking the same thing.
And if we were doing like Mystery Science Theater 3000, I'd have been caught with my pants down yelling at the TV and then turn around and be like, fooled you. And I was like, oh!
But I was just going to let it all go. So I'm glad that they made those tweaks, that it all made sense in the end. I love it when things make sense in the end.
We thank you for your logic.
It doesn't happen very often on this show.
No, it does not. You are asked sometimes to eat some, you know what, just fucking go with it pie.
Go with it. So I was just going to go with it.
So so Red gives them their assignment essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, well, the medical examiner, they go and they find our dude. Obviously he's mummified, which apparently is a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
Still wearing his Letterman's jacket.
Sure was.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Mm. No, I doubt very much that was Long Beach. I grew up in LA.
No, they said Long Beach off the coast of, like, Virginia or something like that. I think there's more than one Long Beach.
It's East Coast. Joe. They're by D.C. I'm sorry. Because I was like, there's no way.
Long Beach.
Well, that's a good point. And I'm so dumb. What a dummy.
They didn't even try to make it look like Long Beach then.
You're sitting next to a dummy. I'm embarrassed. I had a moment, I'm like, and this is the reason I knew. Not because East Coast, I'm like, hey, there's no way anybody out here is wearing their Letterman's jacket when they're trying to score. That's just not happening anymore. That hasn't happened since 1986 on the West Coast. So I was kind of, but that's because it's the freaking East Coast, Joe.
East Coast. Probably got it for playing cricket.
All right, so we dig up the barrel, and we pop our mummy out of the barrel, and he's got ID, which is very convenient.
Well,
as you are wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the bottom of what's going on. He was very, very careful. Of course, Red says, no, your people are garbage. Your people, 2 weeks. We haven't got time for that.
Yeah, we don't have time for that.
What is this?
God, he had this thing planned out.
Because it's Red.
I know, he's so good.
Smartest guy in the room.
Yep.
Two steps ahead of the rest of these shaved monkeys. So
2 weeks, not enough time. You know who we need. You know who's the best when it comes to death and necropsy.
Who would that be?
Necropsy.
Looking at dead people.
Yes.
Who would that be?
Well, none other than Mr. Kaplan herself.
Mr. Frickin' Kaplan. So y'all better get in with Mr. Kaplan. But of course, Harold is going to pull a double cross. Fucking Harold.
That was a dumb move.
That's a dumb double cross.
They made a deal. They made a freaking deal.
They didn't even
try to hide it either.
No. And you know what? There's moments where I get frustrated. Like, you know, whatever. Yeah, I guess maybe the FBI operates this way. Like, hey, we're going to do a dead drop. We're going to do all this. First, we're going to move a corpse and give it to a known criminal. Whatever. I don't get it. I'm not a doctor. I can't say that these aren't things that will happen. But no one goes back to the site where the body was in the first place. Like, nobody, like, they don't leave, like, you know, Jim and Tim. Like, hey, Jim, Tim, you guys are, you know, your partners because your names rhyme. You guys are going to stay here at the drop area for a few hours just for shits. Just for, you know, just in case. That doesn't happen.
I guess not.
We all just leave the drop area.
Moving on. We're on the move. Little did we know, there's a false bottom in that coffin.
I'm not going to lie to you. I saw that coming.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
You think she's just going to lead him right to her?
It's freaking Mr. Kaplan.
I even like the decoy. With, like, the little bob.
Yeah.
Like, slight woman walking out with her hands up and her gloved hands up.
I love decoys in these kind of TV shows because they're always cocky. They're always like, oh, yeah. You can't touch me.
Not only that, she just like turned around, smiled, and then walked off camera. Oh. Like, no one's going to stop her and be like, I had to take you in for questioning.
I wonder if there's like a decoy, like there's a decoy training guy. Like, what do you do? I'm the consultant when they need a decoy. I'm basically a decoy expert. So when they're using a decoy, they bring me in. I explain to the decoy that you can't be touched. No matter what happens, they can't take you away. And act cocky as a decoy. And you know what? At the end,
cocky.
You throw out a smirk to let them know that fooled you.
Just a little half smile at the corner of your mouth.
No. We got you, bitch.
And then you exit stage fright.
Exit stage fright. Get the fuck off the camera. That's my job. That's okay. What I do.
It's a great gig.
It's a great gig. How often do you work? Constantly. You seen these shows? I'm booked months in advance. So we've got our decoy. Obviously, the FBI is embarrassed and runs the, you know, dozens of agents, but can't keep up with Mr. Kaplan. So Mr. Kaplan gets the body to where she already originally planned to have the body, mm-hmm. and she figures out that there's a smelly stuff, and I don't remember the name of it.
I do.
Oh, you do.
Zeolite. It's a smelly stuff, it like absorbs the odors of smelly stuff, commonly used in schools and hospitals.
Well, apparently. It's also good for keeping the odor off of dead bodies from exiting their respective oil drums.
Yeah, but if he was sealed in an oil drum, was the smell really going to get out?
I'm no doctor. I don't know how these things work.
And wasn't he in the ocean, or was he like in the sand? And then the reason after 15 years.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
Whatever. It still was a shitty way to die.
Yeah, no matter how you
really
cut it.
Sucky.
No matter how you...
Really quite terrifying.
It's like, I feel like in a past life I probably died on a submarine because I am so terrified of being underwater in a thing. Underwater in a thing is the worst thing I can imagine. And like that,
did you just say that you probably died in a submarine?
I believe I did because I'm really terrified. Like that scene in Casino Royale where I don't remember her name, Vespa, where uh-huh. she's
Ava Green.
What's that?
Ava Green.
Ava Green, super hot in Casino Royale. Oh my God, sometimes. In Casino Royale. Yeah, that's what I said. Sometimes, but when she's in the elevator in Venice and the elevator goes below the water and she's looking.
At the very end.
Oh yeah, and she looks at him and then she starts breathing in the water.
Oh, I hate when I start breathing in the water. Oh, when your body succumbs. That's a really terrifying thing. Actually.
We've gone off on a tangent and we've ruined Christmas. Okay.
Story of our lives because once again the kids are in charge.
Kids are in charge.
Tangents.
So we come back and we've got Mr. Kaplan with the body. Mr. Kaplan finds out that it's clearly somebody who works at a school.
Yep.
And then how do they take the leap?
A ROM figured it all out because
a ROM computered it.
Because the night that Tyler, the kid, was put into the oil drum and sent out to sea, some janitor was pulled over close to the site for having a broken taillight.
Got it.
Like he went back 15 years through traffic violations.
Fucking around.
And he was a janitor.
Done. So we got
simple as pie.
We got our janitor guy.
Now we
guy.
Got ourselves an Edgar Grant.
Edgar Grant. Janitor guy.
Janitor guy. Creepy serial killer glasses.
And you know, not for anything, I have suspected most of my adult life that the janitors where I went to high school were doing more than they let on. I mean, I know they were selling weed, and they had the best weed. But I always figured there was something else going on. And maybe they were also involved in the recompense business. I don't know.
Recompense.
But the janitors at high schools, they always seem like they have like a little fiefdom, don't they? Like,
well, remember the janitor in The Breakfast Club? He's the best.
He's the best.
Yes.
Because anyway, high school janitor seems like a cooler gig than most janitor gigs.
Get your own office and everything.
Right? And then what do? Well, we disappear for 6 or 7 hours on our little cart. And God knows what we did in that time. And then once you all the little fuckers leave, then we'll clean up. So Edgar Grant. He's the janitor at the school.
So off they go, though. First of all, they send Navabi and two random FBI guys. There's randos now.
I like that, by the way.
Because Wrestler, which we'll get to in a minute.
Oh,
Wrestler,
we gotta talk about Wrestler.
He's taken a leave from the task force.
He has, but you know what he hasn't taken a leave from?
Shaving. But he wasn't wearing a tie.
No! That was casual Wrestler.
That
was Wrestler. Casual. Oh, you were saying. I'm sorry.
No. So they send Navabi and two randos because Lizzie needs to go into hiding.
Yes.
She needs to bone out with Agnes into a safe house.
Because, she's the target.
Yes, she's the target.
Whatever she did.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. She's the target.
Yes. Okay.
And it's one of those things, like, you always want to hear somebody go, yeah, you fucking know what you did.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know what she did.
She doesn't know what
she
did.
She doesn't know.
Nobody knows what she did.
So we've established Agnes, Spagnus of God has been whisked away.
Whisked away.
Presumably by Baz.
Baz people.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably Baz.
Probably Baz.
Probably Baz.
And then, of course, Lizzie's on the phone. I'm gonna call you back. I gotta pack up my shit and get to the safe house. Yeah, no, there's nobody here. It's weird. I'm gonna get off the phone. Bloop.
Mace
in the face.
In the face.
And off she goes.
And meanwhile, Navabi is back at Edgar Grant's house with his wife in the wheelchair.
Who is not doing so well. So we get our backstory on Edgar Grant because she got her legs taken away by a drunk driver who only got 4 years for...
I think it was six down to four for good
down
behavior.
Down to four for good behavior.
Yeah.
And so this is how he got into the revenge business. He took a hammer to the dude, right? Is that the...
Yeah, it's something about like made it look like mincemeat or something like that.
Presumably. I'm guessing maybe a hammer was involved. Ooh. Yeah, something hard. You can't do that with a tweezers. That's not going to happen.
If you sever like an artery or something like that.
It's going to take
maybe.
A lot of time.
Yeah, it'll take time, but he really likes inflicting pain. I think he's the kind of guy who likes to take his time.
I'm going to invest the time it takes to get the job done right.
With tweezers.
I love it. So we know a little bit more about the debt collector. And again, I like the character.
And then, this is how we sort of get down to who is the one who hired Edgar Grant or the not the bone collector, that's a movie, the debt collector, who it is that hired him to go after Lizzie, because they find his secret little antique dungeon.
Yes, and who do we find? We find that there's a name from back in the day who becomes just a red herring. We don't really he just finds out this dude dying of really, really bad cancer.
Yeah.
And that looked horrible.
Well, from his accident with the fryer.
Is that what that was? So that wasn't the cancer, that was the accident
with
the fryer.
No, that was an accident with the fryer.
I'm glad to hear that, because if there's cancer that does that, I don't want to know about that. No.
Anyways, that's Tyson Pryor.
Tyson Pryor. Red herring.
Yeah. I mean, we can go, Tyson Pryor was put in jail by Lizzie because she was a rookie FBI profiler who figured out that he was the guy who was sending letters filled with anthrax to eight presidents of universities.
Because he didn't get tenure. And you know, and that really, I liked it. It serves to establish, number one, that we have a red herring, so we're trying to get some plausibility to keep the FBI on the case. Number two, we've established a little bit more of Lizzie's badassery that has been frankly lacking. So we've got, hey, you know what? Before she got involved in all this shit, she did blow up this thing. That happened.
Yeah, she was supposed to be a great profiler.
There you go.
We just don't see her doing that ever. And I thought we'd see her being a badass profiler more. Oh yeah, she's too busy these days.
She's very busy. She's doing a lot of getting kidnapped. So, at this point, don't we end up with the long Dembe and Red scene? Don't we have in this little area? I feel
like
we're
around this time.
Around this time.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? I enjoyed that tremendously, and I thought they took real full advantage of the opportunity to kind of reset the audience's sympathies, which is what I think the purpose of the scene was. But what did you think of that?
No, that's a great way of putting it. I didn't really think about it that way, that they reset our sympathies, because we've been talking about how they're both the protagonist and antagonist at the same time, Red and Kaplan, in this war that's raging, this civil war that's raging. And you're not really sure who you're rooting for. You're rooting for them both to win. You're rooting for them both to lose.
Right.
So now I'm back on Team Red, 100%. After hearing the sense come out of Dembe's mouth, you know, that she's taken this too far, all to prove that you've gone too far, and she can't see what she's become.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, yeah, although it's... They're just going farther and farther and farther and farther and farther, one-upping themselves to get to a brutal end, whatever that may be. Can't wait to find out what that is. But to hear Dembe, who is always the voice of reason, to be like, no, we need to keep going forward. She needs to be stopped. I was like, oh, yeah, she's gone a little mad.
And I love structure in these things, you know. And it was it's funny, when I was in college, they always want you to learn what is the action of the scene. Mm-hmm. And in college, I never understood it. But doing these shows has taught me how the action of the scene works. It's not the plot of the scene; it's what this scene is designed to do. And this this scene was designed to reset your sympathies.
Yes,
because we've already established that Red shot Kaplan in cold blood. Kaplan, who'd done all this stuff for him over the years. How can we, who can we use, what can we do to reset the audience's sympathies so that we will at least be at a 50-50 and we won't be feeling like Red is the devil? Mm-hmm. So what can we do? And so we'll set it up that Red is now going to be the reasonable one.
But have we ever thought that Red was the devil? We never think he's the devil. We think that he makes these informed choices whether we like them or not, but that's the world in which he operates.
Did you agree with him shooting Kaplan, though?
Well, I saw why he did it.
Right, but
knowing
did you like
who
it?
He was. Of course I didn't like it. But he didn't really, in his mind, he didn't have a choice.
I would argue that that he did have a choice, and I would argue that part of TV writing is you need to keep management of the audience's sympathies. We want the audience, they want the audience, I'm sorry, to feel what they're going to feel, but we also want that experience to be within a certain framework, because we want them to come back and watch next week. And if they hate everybody, they're not coming back. But if they like Red, and they appreciate that Red lives by his code, but there is a code, and if Red has remorse, or if Red is feeling like he may have gone too far, or he may have gotten caught up and made a mistake, and now he's trying to rectify it, and then we can get the audience to the place where they go, okay, well, Red isn't feeling 100% that he was in the right.
I don't think he ever felt 100% that he was in the right, but I think he was operating under that code that you talked about.
Yes. But I love that this...
he said he loved her, that he's had very few friends in his life, and she was that he loves,
love.
And she is one of them.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the purpose of this scene.
And it makes him question his motives. It makes him feel bad about what he did and maybe some of the other actions that he's taken, and it makes him sort of wonder if he is... Because they're sort of mirror images of each other at this point, Kaplan and Red, making him wonder if he's the beast, that he's become the beast that he has been projecting onto Kaplan this whole time.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is this scene does that, right? This scene is him proverbially taking off his cap and holding it in his hand and going, I may have screwed up. I may have gone too far. I may have hurt someone I love for the wrong reasons. I may have reacted wrong. And if I can look her in the eye and I can see if we can both exist, then I know that, because I can. I can exist with her if she can exist with me. And I think structurally that takes the onus off Red, puts it on Kaplan now. Mm-hmm. And if Kaplan's character says no, then Red going after her or the show killing her off is going to be justified in the audience's mind.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And the vehicle to do that is going to be Dembe, because we all believe that Dembe is a relatively neutral partner. Because he's been there since the beginning, and he loves both of them. Mm-hmm. And Dembe had those scenes where he was messed up about Kaplan, and he has the scenes where obviously he loves Red. So I think structurally it was a brilliant
scene. Well,
Dembe
now is no longer neutral. He is 100% on Red's side.
Absolutely.
He
never
knows
left.
Kate needs to be stopped. He knows what's going on with this kidnapping and everything like that as
yeah.
well. He's been there the whole time. So he knows that it's... There has to be that showdown. There has to be that face-off. There has to be that conversation of the option of coexistence. And if not, he knows that they have to kill Kaplan.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, again, that's the purpose of the scene. I love it. I love the way they did it. I love the way they wrote it. And I love the reset and the emotional reset for the audience. And that leads us it leads us up to the scene, the confrontation at the end, which was going so well until our boy Gale got involved. Now, we didn't talk yet. We haven't covered our boy Gale, what's his name? Special Agent Ed Hardy with the FBI, Julian Gale. And his whole deal with Wrestler. We are tight on time, so we got to get into that really quick.
Well, let's finish off like how this ends, though.
Yes.
First, right?
Let's do it.
So we're at the cabin. We find out the big reveal that it was Red the
along.
Whole time, which I thought was a shocking. First, I was shocked, like audibly shocked.
Right.
And I loved it. I'm so ridiculous. It's like, does he have a twin? It took me a minute. I was like, would the twin be wearing the hat? Oh, wait, there's Dembe. Does Dembe have a twin?
We're not the sharpest tools in the
Hold
shed.
Hold on, Jules. Think about this for a second.
I thought they were off Long Beach Pier here in L.A., and Jules thought maybe Red had a twin. You may not be listening to the sharpest people on Earth.
That's just the first thing that popped into my head.
He's got a twin? No, he doesn't have a twin.
No, he doesn't. Oh, God, where was I going with that? Doesn't have a twin. I was surprised that he like, put into action another fake kidnapping, considering this whole story we heard last week of the fake kidnapping that went so terribly awry last time.
So terribly awry.
So terribly awry that he would try this again.
Again.
But he did, and it worked out.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of like Wile E. Coyote, back in the day with the Roadrunner. I think there were so many plots that he had that were like that came so close to working. I was always like, as a kid, I was always like, well, fucking do that again. That almost worked. There was one mistake. You almost had him do that. But he wouldn't. So anyway, I'm glad Red did.
Yeah.
So
Liz is pissed that she's been kidnapped.
Oh.
Or she thinks it's sexy, apparently, according to you.
Go watch the scene again. It was weird. You had me kidnapped. It was weird. I'm telling you, it was fucking weird. So you, it was over the shoulder too. You had me kidnapped. It almost, anyway, I don't know what she was going for, but it came off that way to me. Maybe I'm an insane person. Internet's tell me. So anyway, she's still strapped to a chair, which is uncomfortable. It's very odd to be having a monologue where you're telling someone, I'm doing this for you, as they're strapped to a chair. Yeah. And you're not unstrapping them to the chair.
No, purposely. You're not. You say, I can't.
Yeah, I'd like to help you, but I don't friggin' trust you. But I'm not going to gag you, because I'd like to have this conversation. So, Kaplan's...
Kills a debt collector.
Yes, cold whack. Blood. No questions asked.
No.
Nothing. And the debt collector, you know what? I mean, I get it from Red's point of view. Like, what do I need you around for?
His wife. In the wheelchair.
She's a little lost. Let's be real. She doesn't know that her husband has all this crap down in the basement. And, you know, she's never going to know. She's in a wheelchair. She's not going down the steep basement steps. So, I mean, like, she's pretty disconnected, that lady. She doesn't know.
Okay, fair enough.
You know.
She's probably better off without him.
Probably. And they're going to explain to her, like, here's the stuff that was going on. She's like, oh my gosh, yeah?
Yeah?
Oh, wow. She seems very Midwestern to me. I gave her more of an accent than she had.
So then Kaplan shows up right on cue.
Right on cue.
As per Red's prediction. Because everything fell into place just so.
With a grip of guys.
Yep.
Who I felt bad for. I'm like, are you all going to get killed just for being there? More going in, more red shirts in the old Lizzie column.
Mm-hmm.
These 413 people had to die to protect Lizzie Keene. Why? Because no one likes her. No one likes her, apparently, but all it takes is two people to love her.
Oh, build an entire empire.
Oh.
Just to protect her.
Just to protect her.
It was kind of like this cool little mini war standoff.
I liked it.
I loved it. The guys in the bushes, they had their sights on all their guys, and this is a standoff, and as they're coming up, and Red is telling them to hold their fire, just to see how this is going to go, and then Lizzie mucks it all up every time. I'm Lizzie.
So she screams for Kaplan.
And Kaplan, it's a trap!
Humph! Admiral Akbar is it? It's a trap. And so then we have the Mexican standoff, so to speak.
But I kind of understood why she did it, actually.
No, it made sense.
It made sense. She does not want to be a willing participant in that.
But, yep.
Kaplan literally died for her.
Yes, totally.
Literally. So she can't be a part of this.
No, I get it. And she comes out there. It felt very much to me like the 12-year-old coming between mom and dad when they're fighting.
Yes, me too. I thought the same thing.
But it like mom and dad are fighting and I'm not going to let you guys fight. It sounded that way. It felt that way. It was acted that way because, mm-hmm. That's
it
how it
is
felt.
That way.
That's how it was. So so she comes out and she's like, you guys can't fight over me. No. I hate it when you yell.
Look, he promised me he's not going to kill you if you just can coexist.
He totally swore. He said he pinky swore.
He told me.
So can you coexist?
And then come on.
I fucking love Kaplan, though. She's like, no.
Nah.
No.
Nah, no. Nah.
And if I
happen.
Were you four guys and I'm paying to hang out with me, you should fucking run because I'm not. They're going to have to kill me.
Yes.
But I love the Mexican standoff action. I love everybody's work in that. I love Red's face. Like, shit, really?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of suspect it was going to go that way. And then the whole time, he said beforehand, will I have the strength to do what I have to do if I have to do it?
But then there's Gale.
Special Agent Ed Hardy.
Who's doing his, best to do in a De Niro impression the entire time.
Running.
Right the whole time. I was like, oh, God, this is like a comedy De Niro. The whole time.
I don't know. I don't know about Special Agent Julian Gale, but
still weeping over those damn bodies. Although I am glad that they moved him out of the ice rink finally,
which was nice because
for that.
Howie's Ice Rink and Fun Emporium can reopen after they explained to everybody they cleaned the ice really really
good.
Get
our Olympic hopefuls back on the ice.
I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back.
You have to.
How do you know they got them all, Mom? How do you know they got them all?
We'll never know.
So Julian Gale takes a pot shot.
Yeah.
With, looks like an FBI rifle.
Yeah, misses.
Misses!
He's too emotionally invested.
He hit a rhinestone while he was cocking that gun back. He might have hit like a Dragon Eye rhinestone on his t-shirt.
Oh, hit a rhinestone!
I'm just saying. So Julian Gale comes through.
Julian Gale has followed Wrestler because he doesn't trust Wrestler.
Nope.
Which harkens back to the meeting with Marvin Gerard.
With Marvin Gerard.
Who obviously knew Wrestler but played it off pretty well. And
I did. I liked that, yeah.
I liked it too.
How do you know who he is? Ah, saw him all over the news. Who doesn't know who Agent Wrestler is? Shaves 7 times a day. Keeps his hair just so.
Smug and cocky but professional.
Those were not the lines.
You're just smug and cocky.
Yeah, I'm just smug and cocky.
Yeah. Which was also a great scene. So, yeah, he followed him. He knows something is afoot with Wrestler. He's following his gut. Even the wrestler told him, better believe me.
Yeah.
Threw him against a wall.
Yeah.
Everything.
So that's what happened.
It was true. It is what happened.
It's a stupid sounding story, though. Let's be real. I got brainwashed.
He hasn't lied to him yet.
No. Well.
He's eluded the truth.
You certainly lied by omission.
But Gail has not come out and said, hey, do you know where Red is?
Yeah, that's true.
Point blank. Do you know what's going on with Red?
I'm too weird of a character to actually come out and say shit like that.
No.
What's going on?
I cry over the bodies.
Oh, they talk to me.
They're still talking to me.
I apologize to them one by one. 86 times. It's a lot of apologies.
They're telling me that Red is untouchable.
I don't believe him. Not you. Not you, wrestler. You shaved before you came here to meet me. How could you be? Anything but clean shaven. So we know that obviously our boy Gale doesn't trust wrestler. Mm-hmm. He follows him to the Mexican showdown, so to speak. The Mexican standoff.
Mm-hmm.
Tries to break the Mexican standoff with a couple of pot shots. Misses.
Yep.
Gets back in his car unperturbed and bones out.
Yeah.
Strange scene.
Because he had to be there when wrestler shows back up later.
Right. I got to be back at the house.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm not sure forensics came back and said those shots didn't come from any of Red's people.
Yeah, the ballistics showed that it was not Red's people. That ballistics showed it was not Kaplan's people.
I don't know how they got Kaplan.
How would they know that?
I don't know how that's
but, well, there
silly.
Was a lot of shooting going on. Bullets were flying. Everyone was shooting.
No one got killed. It was like a stormtrooper fight. Like lots of guns blazing. Nobody dies.
Which is only going to heighten the war and the feud between Red. Who's that?
Reed.
I don't know.
Reed and Kruplin.
Red and Kaplan, because they both think the shot came from the other.
So we don't know where, but I mean, the point I'm making, I guess, is ballistics wise, somebody's going to have to figure out that it came from an FBI rifle, which is going to point the finger at Special Agent Ed Hardy. That's all I'm saying.
Here's
AKA
hoping.
Julian Gale.
I'm worried for Resser.
Yeah, I would be too. Because you know who doesn't shave every day?
Oh, Julian Gale.
Julian freaking Gale. You're damn right.
I think he grooms his stubble just so.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Set your trimmers to douche, my friends. douche level. All right. I think that pretty much
That's
wraps up
we
where
got.
We're at. Should we move on to predictions?
Sure.
Oh, there it is. There's our...
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
One episode left. Julia Kearley.
One episode left till the season finale, 2-hour finale next week. I don't know where this is going yet. I just said, I am nervous for Wrestler and his safety. That's all I got.
That's all you got.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I got nothing. I'm very excited to see how this all ends. I did see the teaser for next week, and I thought of you immediately, Flip, because they're talking about once and for all finding out if Red is her father.
Today's the day. Mm-hmm. You'll know for sure. Is Red Lizzie's father?
That maybe we'll tell you in season 5.
Right. This is what we call the dickhead teaser. No!
What do you predict?
I predict...
I don't really have anything.
I predict the following two things. I predict Julian Gale is not long for this earth. There'll be one less rhinestone bedazzled FBI agent.
And Wrestler's going to have to be the one to kill him.
There's no question.
I think I predicted that a few weeks
ago.
Yes,
I think you did.
As soon as he introduced.
He's going to go home and he's going to have a pill and a drink and shave and think about what he's done.
Maybe he won't shave.
Oh, shit.
Oh, he's going to be so up in arms and upset that he's not going to shave.
I really... Internets, tell me how often you have to shave to achieve that.
Can you imagine a world where Wrestler doesn't shave for a day?
It would be so crazy. I don't even know. I also predict that they have set us up now for Kaplan to die. And that really bums me out because I like Kaplan. And there's been a huge, comeback from the dead. And it would be a shame. But I think they've set us up for Kaplan to get whacked. So those are my predictions. Julian Gale dies. Kaplan dies. I don't know.
What if Kaplan dies trying to save Liz? So she's sort of redeemed at the end. Red and Kaplan standing off and he shoots her. She's dead. Maybe they're fighting some other force that's coming after Liz. And she, jumps in front of the bullet or something ridiculous like that for Liz. So she dies somewhat of a heroine.
Don't stay here for Red. Go away. Get your own life. Something like that as a dying monologue that she gets.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Maybe she has a, what's it called? Never mind. That's all we got.
That's all we got.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. We would love to hear your predictions for next week. So if you guys got something you think is going to happen, please let us know on the comment section over there on the YouTubes. Jules, where can the young people find you?
Oh, young people. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. I can't speak. Instagram with my name, Julia Kearley, JULIACEARLEY.
And you can find me on the Twitters and on Instagram at Joe Flippo, JOEFLIPO. We will see you guys next week. Thanks so much.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.